Good morning, Game Guy fans. Today's Friday, July 24th, the year of our Lord 2026. It's Coffee with JC Sherbert. Hope you're having a fantastic week. It's kind of that period of time that I don't like. Of course, I don't really, I complain all the time about it not being football season. So, and then it gets here and it goes by really, really quick. So that's just how it goes when you love a sport that you don't play but 12 days guaranteed. Some play more. Hopefully, the Gamecocks do this year. You have 12 game days out of 365. And then what the heck do you do the rest of the time? I wish I was like, and I love baseball, I love Major League Baseball, but, I wish I was into it like I was when I was a kid. I always tell the story. 1988, the Braves lost 106 games, went 54 and 106. And of course, we all know the World Series appearances and the dramatic wins over the Pirates and the NLCS were right around the corner, those of you that are Braves fans. And, so there were some Glavins and Smoltzes and or, yeah, Glavins and Smoltzes that got called up, some Steve Averys that got called up late. You got to see play. So I'll always, cherish that because I was familiar with some of these guys that would become Hall of Famers, superstars. But boy, I watched every game, man. I think there were more people in my living room with me and my little brothers than there were at Fulton County Stadium in September. But I watched every game. And sometimes I wish I was, more into that because I'd have more game days, 162 of them. That's half the year almost. You're playing baseball, college football, man. You're just not. So it's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes with this sport that we all love and cherish, or at least those of us that aren't in charge. The people that are in charge, I think, are clueless. I think they'd probably rather watch 162 baseball games sometimes, or just count their money, right? To check their bank account over and over. I checked mine this morning. My goodness. Anyway. Hope you're all doing well. Topic today, we're going to get on the offensive line a little bit, but we're going to look at it a little bit differently. Because I've kind of been looking into it, and I think, right off the bat, I'm not going to sit here and preach and say it's going to be better. I think that you go through like seasons and you hope it gets better and then it doesn't. And then even if it is better, it's hard for people to see that because, as I always say, you're going to struggle sometimes up front, on the offensive line in, college football these days. If you read up, South Carolina's not alone in having offensive line issues. I think the last 2 years, South Carolina's offensive line issues or blocking issues in general have been dramatic and extreme. You have a quarterback like Lenore Sellers that can escape and run and get positive yards, and he gets sacked how many times? I mean, that's weird to me because the idea of having a quarterback with some wheels and some escapability is that you eliminate those sack plays. I mean, you think about the dual threat quarterback types that Coach Spurrier had here. And basically two come to mind. One was kind of a part-timer sometimes, Sylvell Newton. One of the big things there, because South Carolina was struggling on the offensive line when Spurrier put Newton in the lineup in 06. And he started four or five straight games. And that mitigated or eliminated those lost yardage plays. And so if you kind of look at the numbers, sacks can put you in longer downs and distances. They can, if it happens on second down and you're at second and two, let's say you bust off an 8 yard run. Great. That's a great first down play, right? So you're second and two. Well, a lot of coordinators will just run it. And in Carolina's case, sometimes that led to a third and one and a half. But, or sometimes the book says, or the analytics say, take a shot because you can always pick up the third and two. Call anything you want on third and two. And, but then so you try that play, which is perfectly normal to pass on second and two, and it's a sack. Well, then it's third and 15. Yeah. It's just those types of things in the rhythm and a flow of a game just hurt. And South Carolina's been very dramatic. But Savelle, when Spurrier put him in there, he would run around the he Spurrier said, run around the edge, just take off. And it mitigated that. Connor Shaw was a master at that. Connor Shaw, it would be, third and 10 after two stinkers of plays. He dropped back to pass, wasn't there. He'd run around the edge, beat the guy out of the corner, pick up 10 and a fourth yard in the first down. Keeps drives alive. And so, it doesn't make any sense that Lenore Sellers has been sacked that many times. Some are on him, and those of you that believe that, I'm with you. And I mean, just like the sacks under Steve Spurrier, when those many years where the offensive line struggled early in the season, he'd always tend to clean it up, but those were not all on the line. And then other people missed blocks and things like that too. Tight ends, running backs, quarterbacks, receiver runs the wrong route, quarterback's a dead duck. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go into actually getting sacked. But by and large, the protection is up to the five guys up front playing well, and there's so many mental mistakes too. So South Carolina is kind of an extreme example, but you look around the country, and offensive line is becoming a lost art. There's very few, even the offensive lines last season, like Florida was just talking big about their O-line, and then Jaden Ball. I mean, you got that kind of dude, and you got a great line. The Gators and Billy Napier, as we knew, loved to run the ball. It just didn't happen for him, man. I mean, I watched their game with Texas, and Texas wasn't. I mean, you got some stars on that defense, like always. They'll have stars every year, but they weren't. Florida really didn't always get the best of Texas. They won the game. That was a big upset for them, but. You watched them last year, and it wasn't what you thought. And I mean, you have moments too in games. I'll use Texas A&M, for example, pretty good offensive line, right? Well, South Carolina, the first half out there, did that look like the best offensive line and one of the best in the country? I think Dylan Stewart with half a back, blew Marcel Reed up, and they were stopping them, and second half is a different story. But so my point is, even the best offensive lines, Clemson, I know Clemson had some injuries last year. They were supposed to be elite on the offensive line. They weren't. And injuries do play a part of it. And here's one of the reasons why. And this is kind of a big picture thing. And this leads to my greater point about, why things. Even if they're not better this year, which I hope Carolina does not give up 40 plus sacks. We all hope that. I would hope, even just from the standpoint of the scheme moving quicker. I mean, you may have a three and out with a drive that lasts 15 seconds with three incompletions, but let's just hope the sacks, cut down just by the basics of the scheme. But you kind of look at it this year, and I hope Carolina doesn't give up that many. But I'll say why I'm kind of optimistic on the setup, because that's all we have right now. What's changed, I guess? What has changed to give you hope besides, oh, new players, new coaches? There's some specifics there that I really like that have kind of come to my attention lately in a number of ways. So we're going to get into that specifically, but I think one of the reasons offensive line struggle, and I believe I've written this and said this, it's so hard to play. And no matter how many times the powers that be in college football and everybody wants to, the talking heads and even some fans want to say it's the NFL now. These are professionals now. Well, okay, but they're still young people. They're still, I mean, when I was 18, I was fundamentally different than I am at 49. Heck, when I'm 49, I'm fundamentally different than I was at 42. 42 was way too fun of a year. But anyway, we all grow, is my point. And young people today, and I'm not old man yells at cloud, I think this generation, Gen Z, the young people now, I think it's a very intelligent generation. As far as knowing things and having a They're not whiny people, you know, from what I could tell. I have two at home. They're not whiny. They just don't have kind of sometimes the, because they kind of grew up with their phone in their hands and they grew up living a lot of their lives online, which I'm thankful for people who live their lives online because I make a living that way. But, there's a lot that sort of goes into their mindset and morale. Okay. And often, and because, and I'm not saying anybody's selfish or that this is the wrong way to do it. It's human nature. Shoot, I work in an industry where, we have a whole line of people my age and older that, have fed into this, the internet culture. It's important, online, you kind of get a, I'm not going to say an ego, but you get a lot of gratification out of the work, out of interacting with people and what others are saying. It's human nature. Well, on the offensive line, nobody ever mentions you. The masses don't talk about you. I mean, the color commentator, if Gary Danielson is up there or Herbie or somebody like that, or even some of the ones that aren't that good, Matt, and especially like Cole Kublick and Matt Stinchcomb on the SEC Network, there because they're a couple of ballers on the offensive line back in the day. If you ever go back and watch those guys play, and I got a lot of respect for both those guys, they're going to talk about the block for about 15 seconds, a soundbite. But if you're in the stadium or you're there, and Matt Fuller or Jawaan Howell or Christian Clark bust through a hole and you can drive my truck through it, and some people are gonna say good block, but then they're gonna go right back to, hey, how about Matt Fuller? If Lenore Sellers has all day to throw and he throws a bomb to Nick Harbor, everybody's gonna talk about Nick Harbor and Lenore Sellers. You're not gonna talk about, hey, way to go, Carter Miller, way to double team that note. You just don't do it, and it's fine because you follow the ball. It's a thankless position. So you don't get a lot of public gratification, which is important to young people these days, when it comes to playing that spot. So the only time you hear about how you're playing or any kind of reinforcement outside of things, and before you're like, well, let's just block it out, you can't. I mean, it's again, they live on, you see it all the time. They're all on social media, things like that. And coaches can't work around that. So the only time outside of the building they really hear their name is when they're struggling. That's tough when everybody else on the team gets kudos. And then if you're an individual, and I'll say this, there's not a leader, a team guy. I mean, even the team guys now, and this is not selfishness. This is not a personality flaw. It's how it is. You still like to hear your name every now and then, right? Even if it's just all about the team. So even when you're praising the offensive line individually, it's like, oh, the line blocked well. That's five, six, seven guys. So it's hard. Because what do we, the instant gratification of today's society, you're not just not getting it instantly. You've got to really dig to find your name in the paper. If there are, they print them anymore or online. You got to dig. Thankfully, there's some things like PFF. Would, sometimes I wonder what they're looking at. Sometimes I agree. That's football. So you can look your name up there. But where, I mean, when Tree Babalade a couple of years ago was named the National Freshman of the Year of the Week by 24/7 Sports after the Georgia game, that was huge for him. I mean, my goodness, man, I got him a little overconfident, right? But so it's hard because you put in all, they put in more work than anybody. Because they've got to be big dudes. And then you got to bend every play in an unnatural position. The rules as far as holding and what the defense can do versus what you can do. I mean, the defense can literally like slap your body, just slappy, slappy, slappy. And do, defensive guys can do, I mean, the rules are set up to favor the defense in that area. I mean, you can't have holding. That would be ridiculous. But, just. It's hard. Plus assignments. Plus, you got to play five as one. Plus, if one, it's the Christmas light position on the football field. One goes out, they all go out. That's hard. That I mean, and mentally, it's ridiculously hard because you're doing a thankless job day in, day out. Not to mention, you're a big dude. It's unnatural what you're doing. They get banged up. They have to play through pain. I mean, it is a brutal position. And so, as time has gone on, it's gotten less and less sexy. And most of your dudes that, I mean, it's just hard, you know? And I think a lot of your better athletes, kind of like we were talking about corners being scarce these days, I think most of them play receiver. It's tough. My stepson played offensive line at the high school level. You know, that's not to mention these coaches that coach that position, a lot of them, you know, try to make it way too complicated. All these it's slide protections and it's you know it's like it's kind of like they're like, hey, wait a minute, we got to do something complicated because of these futuristic you know, the game in the trenches is still the game in the trenches. I think most would tell you that. And so let's just establish that it's a difficult position to play, and for that reason, and with where we are now, it's tough around college football. You know, and then the defensive lines are not getting any less athletic and huge and freaky. It's just bottom line. I think South Carolina recruiting wise, and it didn't work out with the last batch, but I think they've done a good job kind of trying to get freaks, you know, match freaks and tough guys on the offensive line recruiting. You know, that's why you got a guy like Neff Jiwa, who, you know, may not play a lick this year. I got to teach him the game, but if you can teach him, he can be something else. Also, this is a quote I think I've said four or five times in the last 2 weeks. But Dad always said about offensive linemen, they're the ones in the locker room counting their money. And it is a high paying job, both in terms of college now and in the pros. So you do get to sit there and count your money. It's a thankless job, but you get to count your money. So it's like being like a, I don't know. What's a job that makes a plumbers make a ton of money now? Electricians in our society, we probably should value those folks a little more. And they're making bank, you know, because not many people know how to do it. So it's sort of a blue collar, lost art, high upside financial gig, if for lack of a better term. So that established that it's hard. How is Carolina going to get a better offensive line? Because that's probably all you care about, and rightfully so. I've blabbered on about my philosophies long enough here on Coffee on a Friday. Well, here's the encouraging things, and again, there's no guarantees it's not going to be an issue. In fact, if I were looking at every room on the offense and what as a room, you know, where is the question mark? Because you know, you could say quarterback after Sellers. But I have a lot of comp. I'm so much more comfortable with like a Cutter Woods backup situation than maybe I was last year, where it was, well, you knew it probably should be Woods, but you got Doty, and we saw what happened in the Vanderbilt game and all that. And receiver, you know, the question marks there, who's going to come out of the dogfight? Same with running back, behind Fuller and Clark, and all of those guys are doing well. Tight end. You've got a very eclectic, diverse group that can do different things. I think that's what you want. Offensive line, though, a lot of new. Got to gel, new system, new players, new coaches. It's new. It's all new. Now, everybody on the offense is in a new system, but you got new players and you got guys coming up from other levels. You do have guys that have played at the Power Four level. On the offensive line, but you know you also have got Dane Arnett from Ferris State, and just because Trinidad Chambliss translated from Ferris State doesn't mean Dane Arnett is. Everybody loves Kojo Poku, myself included. That doesn't mean it's going to translate from the American Conference to the SEC, when because you know you ask anybody and. The SEC, that's what the difference is. You're facing these ridiculous defensive lines week in and week out, defensive fronts. So there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee Shedd Surratt's going to play well at right tackle. You know, I think if Pete gets back, He can he's going to be solid, but that's one guy. You know, Hank Purvis has gotten better every place he's been. Power four guy at Purdue last year. You know, I like him. SEC, different deal, different deal, and it's hard. But what gives you confidence? What JC? What gives you confidence that, you know, there are signs that things will work out? Well, the first thing I want to bring up is, and this is an intangible thing that I think when you're losing, coaches say, but you don't want to hear, or fans will bring it up, and it's like, no, it's this, especially like diehards. You know, we don't. You know, I interact with diehards every day, and you guys are great, and I love it. But those of us that just like talking ball, we don't like necessarily dive into intangibles, leadership. There's the big thing. I started thinking, I don't think South Carolina, since Vershawn Lee left, and that was in 2024. Vershawn Lee was a very, very good leader. One of my favorite humans to play during the Beamer era. Got to know him at the wing eating contest, right? Great leader, person. Gave his all for the program. And he's the center too, you know? So it's like, you know, I think before him at center, Eric Douglas was a pretty good leader in time in 2022. And, you know, those lines were not super duper, but I think there was no leadership on the offensive line last year. Josiah Thompson was a young guy working through his own stuff. You know, you got Surratt, who's a true freshman. Boaz Stanley obviously had his own problems. You know, who else played? Cason Henry, Trevon Ball. No, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with those guys. There's always guys that are leaders and guys that are just kind of doers that go out there and do. And you saw kind of in 2024 what leadership meant on the defense with a guy like Demetrius Knight. You know, he was the leader of the entire team. And Beamer's talked about this. So, and look, with all these new guys, you're like, who's going to be the leader of the offensive line? Well, I've got the answer. And he's working his way back from injury right now, but it's Jacarius Peak. And how do I know this? Because the first time I've really, yeah, because he kind of got here and he was injured, so he hadn't spoken with the media. So he interviewed with 1801 Media, Jimmy Francis, who those interviews with those players, I encourage everybody to go check it out. If you just want to hear about lives of players or some football talk, some insight, it's on 1801 Media, part of the Garnet Trust, which is my advisor that I have on here that love the Garnet Trust, encourage everybody to get involved. So I'm listening to this yesterday, and Jacarius Peake's one of the most impressive human being individuals as far as what he says. And then so you back channel that, you know, is this real or is he just, you know, because sometimes players will get up there and say the right things, but they don't act the right way. No, it's real. And, you know, that here's a guy that was the, you know, the one of the most coveted offensive linemen in the portal. Could have gone to Texas, could have gone to Alabama, could have gone Texas A&M, gotten paid, whatever. Came to South Carolina because he said, it's going to make me a better man, make me a better person. His entire interview was about overcoming things and staying humble and all that. And the one thing he said continuously was, as he was talking about working back, and he's making good progress, he's going to be back, is being a leader and being there for the other players in the room. I want to make sure my offensive line guys are in the moment, doing it, making things happen. He's like, I want to make sure they don't get two up or two down. He's like, in life, losses happen, and football losses happen, and wins happen. You can't get two up, you can't get two down. It's beautiful, beautiful. Plus, I kind of like his Valdosta, Georgia roots and his basketball background, quite frankly. But since Jacarius Peak, nobody's talked about that because he's been away rehabbing, and you probably are wondering, well, how the hell is that going to happen? Because he's not with the team. Oh, it'll happen. You know, some guys just strike you in an interview as a natural leader. Caleb Herring was on it with him too, and also is an impressive person, which tells you why. And look. It would sound like Mr. What's the guy from South Park? That's the teacher. Mr. Garrison from South Park. People that pick South Carolina are just better people. No, I'm not saying that at all. There's good players, good people everywhere. I'm saying though, Shane Beamer with the culture he's been attracts a certain type of guy. A certain type of guy. And look, no homer here. Dabo did this at Clemson. A certain, and I'm not saying it's the same type. But Dabo, when it was just regular old recruiting, there were some of the elite players in the country, and they went to Clemson, that really kind of gravitated more towards Dabo's style and what he wanted to do, as opposed to an Urban Meyer or Nick Saban. Okay. And that's a smart recruiting strategy, because if you're not a blue blood, and South Carolina isn't, you've got to beat them on some things. And I don't think Clemson was before they won the got back to the national championship. If you're going to beat them, you got to be different. And, so to get a guy like Peak over some blue bloods, or to get a Caleb Herring out of the portal over Texas and Miami, they both kind of said, well, South Carolina, it was just different. And it related to me. It was the best fit for me and to make me the best person and player I can be. And that's the pitch. So guys that buy into that, they want that. It's not necessarily about the fancy smancy stuff. I mean, Jacarius Peake likes to ride four wheelers and go fishing, and he's from Valdosta, South Georgia. So he's kind of just a salt of the earth guy. And then guys like that that have natural leadership ability, like Peake, they end up the leadership comes across to their teammates because it's real. It's real. And I think this got lost on me. When I was looking at Peak's film at NC State, what he did at NC State and all that, but he was a terrific leader, and leads by example and also verbally. So I like that, and I think he's going to be back. And I think that's a guy. So now his importance becomes that much more important, because not only is he probably the starting left tackle, he's the leader. And leadership at that spot. Because, I mean, like I said, you don't get any credit. You don't get any credit for anything. These are the people you're in the foxhole with, is all you've got. How are you going to get up and go to battle? You need a leader. Last year's offensive line, zero leadership. Zero leadership. None. And it's nothing against any of those guys. Sometimes you just get a group of guys that, there's no. They're all alpha males because they play the position, but it's one alpha, the alpha of the group. So I'm encouraged that Peak is that guy. I think other guys on that offensive line too have some natural qualities as well. But to me, your best leaders are when they're really good players too. And I'm not saying the other guys are not good players. Don't get me wrong. But this guy's an NFL draft pick if he plays well this year and all that first round. And so for that guy to be your leader, that's that when I've seen the best teams through the years, like at Florida, they had a really good offensive line back in the 2008 season. And there were two of them, but they were twins, the Pouncey twins. Those guys ballers, just in love football and were good. And things got tough. They were, it wasn't just Tim Tebow on that team. That's just one example. So Jacarius Peake, there you go. You want your leader for the offensive line this year. Reason to be encouraged is him. The second part is coaching. And here's how it was explained to me about Randy Clements and Jason Smith. Okay. And why the coaching is different. And look, again, are they going to play better collectively? Are we going to sit there on Saturdays going, oh, the O-line looks like, Michigan a couple of years ago? Let's not say that. Let's just look at the process. Let's go Nick Saban and be process driven. And Jason Smith, his assistant, who brings a ton of credibility as a first round draft pick, and Randy Clements, who's the a lot of folks have compared him to Brad Lawing, the late great D line coach. And after having some conversations this weekend or this week, here's why I'm kind of leaning toward that, because he's a teacher. Right. And he's a guy that can teach the position. And that's what Brad did. Not only can he teach it in terms of sitting up there on the wipey board, there's tons of coaches that are elite on the wipey board, by the way, that aren't good coaches. He knows how to get in and practice and apply. And this is why the stupid criticism of his drills was one of the dumbest internet arguments I've ever seen on X in the history of dumb internet arguments. Because he knows how to teach how to play, and he knows the drills and the actual application in practice to do it. He's not just talking and explaining, you know. He's a good great explainer, but also how it was pointed out to me was he's going to show you, right? And that's what Brad did. You know, I watched Spurrier open all the practices, and Lawing was over there toward the media because the offense was on the other field, and you know, you just watched him and how he co would correct and correct and correct and correct. Do it this way, do it this way. Here's why we do this. Here's why we do that. Fast paced, and it was tough. I mean, it's not like a not everybody's buddy, right? You know, Clements is kind of the guy that is the teacher and gets in there and over and over and over and does it. And then Jason Smith's kind of the intense dude because you need an intense. I think offensive line coaches in general are very intense. Sean Elliott was that way. And so that's how it was explained to me why what the difference is here is it's not he's not just going to teach you, he's going to show you. And that's made all the difference, especially when you got a lot of new guys, right? You got new guys from the portal, and then you got really young guys. And that's why player development, when you look at Randy Clements' track record, he's developed quite a few offensive linemen. He's a developer, which is good. I think at this position, at this point, you know, everybody loves getting 4 and 5 star guys. And like, believe me, Nate Carson, he's got a bright future. Bright future. But you know, if you're maybe not gonna have a recruiter that will sign a bunch of 4 and 5 star offensive linemen, but they know what they're looking at and they know how to get the most out of guys. Because look around the country. I mean, there's offensive lines with blue chip guys up and down that are god awful. So if you're gonna do, I'm gonna lean more towards the developer and the guy that can maximize talent at this point. And I would say that even if Randy Clements wasn't there. I mean, like if let's say the whole thing blew up, or let's say Carolina is really good, Kendall Briles gets a head coaching job, Clements goes with him, obviously. You know, at that point, go get me the guy that can develop and all that. The recruiting will take care of itself. You know, you have to recruit good players. Don't get me wrong, but you know, to me, you know, anywhere this is applicable everywhere from Ohio State to Miami to wherever. Of course, Miami's got an offensive line coach as his head coach, so they're probably okay there. And they were pretty good on the O-line last year. But I just look at it, man, and that's very, very encouraging. To know that inside the program, that's kind of the take is that this guy's a teacher and this guy's a shower and it's made a difference with the guys. And then you throw in the leadership, player leadership quality. Coaches can only lead so much. And that's a good sign for this offensive line this year. So, teachers and leaders. That's a good subject for today. Speaking of teachers and leaders, high school sports, State of South Carolina, Four Quarter Friday show up at 9 with Matt and Rob Williams. You can check that on the Four Quarter Friday YouTube. You can check that on the Chief Sports app, also X, the X accounts. They got Ramon Robinson, quarterback guru, who's helped Lenore Sellers quite a bit. So maybe Sellers will come up in conversation. So you want to check that out. Also, Ian Rafferty, the head coach at Somerville High School, go the Green Wave, one of the most storied programs in the history of high school football in our state. Also, check out fourquarterfriday.com for the complete schedules, coverage of high school sports. It's on the Rivals and on 3 Network. Also, later today, inside the Gamecock Super Stream, it'll be me, Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock is in, Jamie Bradford is in, the Mad Dog is in. Jamie may have another guest. Surprise guest come in, but looking forward to wrapping up the week on a Freaky Friday. as Phil likes to call it. Check out thebigspur.com, gamecockcentral.com. Join today for $1 for 5 days, then get half off for the rest of the year. That's a deal right there. I don't know, man. We're giving away the farm. You can also join fourquarterfriday.com for the same price. You can join one or the other and still get all the articles on both. So go join one or the other if you'd like. If not, you can, I mean, you're welcome to just hang with me every morning like you do and watch the shows. We don't just love our members. We love everybody that gives us a chance to entertain and inform about the South Carolina Gamecocks, South Carolina high school sports, college football, all the stuff we do, pop culture here at Chief Sports. And certainly very happy to be affiliated with On3 and Rivals, and just kind of feel like we're back in our element. All right, folks, hope you have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for listening to Coffee. We'll be back Monday with more Gamecock football right here. This is JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.